It's time for Big Blue Kickoff Live. Only on Giants.com.
Manning back, steps up, heaves one down the middle of the field, into the end zone, and Nix makes the catch for the touchdown! He went up with the big hands and caught it on the Hail Mary!
Boots one, returnable for Williams from his own 20. Lost the ball, and the Giants say they have it, and they do! Devin Thomas recovered it, but the rookie Jaquan Williams punched it out.
Manning out of the shotgun set, he's back to throw. Climbs the pocket, deep ball down the left sideline, and it's going to be caught. Was he inbounds? Yes! Manningham on the sideline. Brady's under pressure, Brady's chased, Brady heaves one. Down the middle of the field, into the end zone, a jump ball, and it's incomplete, and the ball game's over, and the Giants have won Super Bowl 46.
Now, here's your host, John Schmell.
Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com, 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. Also on Twitter at hashtag Giants Chat. Send in your questions after a little Easter holiday weekend off. We are back, and we will be with you every morning from 10 to 10:30 right here on Giants.com. This is a bit of a slow period for the NFL right now. Not a whole lot going on. The fury that was free agency is kind of past. The guys that are out there are more or less going to be out there, in my opinion, until after we get through the NFL draft. Teams are going to wait to see who they get on April 26th, which is, of course, that Thursday night, and then they're going to move forward and then fill in the rest of the holes via the veterans and other young players and older players available in free agency. So what all the NFL teams are really doing now are getting locked in on what they're going to do in the draft. And you have all these draft experts out there. You have all these guys that say, I know exactly what this team's going to do, what that team's going to do. And frankly, it's all a joke. Nobody has any idea what teams are going to do yet. Do you know why? The teams don't know. The Giants are just getting their scouts into the building now to have their meetings to decide who they want to target, who they like, and create their draft board. So if you're reading out there on ESPN or NFL.com that, oh, the Giants are picking this guy, the Giants are picking that guy, don't believe it. Nobody knows. Do you know why nobody knows? The Giants don't know. Especially when you draft so late in the first round, at number 32, you don't even know who's going to be available. You can look at 20 mock drafts from last year. Not one of them had the Giants selecting Prince Amukamara. Do you know why? Nobody thought he was going to be there. And until you know who's going to be on the board, you don't know who the Giants are going to take. And you never know who's going to have a precipitous fall until you actually get to draft night and you see how the draft plays out. So anybody that tells you that they know what the Giants are going to do, don't buy it. Nobody does, because the Giants don't know. And the other people out there like to try to treat the draft like it's some type of science. Like there's a way to get picks right no matter what. And I hate to tell you this, and it might burst the bubbles of all the draft experts out there, the people that do all the research and all this stuff. Do you want to know what the draft is? It's educated guesswork. That's what it is. It can be more. Some teams might have a better educated draft, you know, guesswork than other teams. They might be better at it. They might do better preparation, have a better feel for these guys. But the truth of the matter is, until you actually get these guys on an NFL field, playing against NFL-level competition, something none of them have ever done, you're not going to know how these guys react at the NFL level. So anybody that tells you they know this guy's going to do this, they know this guy's going to do that, again, nobody knows. Everyone thought Trent Dilfer was going to be a Pro Bowl quarterback. Heath Shuler, Ryan Leaf. I can keep going through the list here, folks. Nobody really knows. It's educated guesswork. These teams do the best work they can to get a feel for these players. And once they have a feel for these players, they pick the guy they think has the best chance to be a starter. You know, a guy like Andrew Luck, obviously, with his skills, abilities, his speed, his arm strength, his mental acuity, he'll have a much better chance of succeeding as somebody drafted later in the first round. But all this is, you gather all the information you can. You look at what he did at the combine. More importantly, you take a look at what he did in his college career against competition. You have your meeting with him. You get a feel for his personality, whether or not he's going to be driven. And then you also have to judge things like, how is this guy going to react after he gets his first big contract? Is he going to be happy getting his million-plus dollar money in the first round and then not work hard? Because to succeed in the NFL, you have to become a much better player than you were in college because the competition's that much tougher. So you have to find the guy that's going to be willing to work even harder after he gets his monetary reward. And that takes a certain mindset, and that's why those meetings that these teams have with the players at the combine and invites later, visits to their pro day, that's why all those things are so important to judge the type of person you're getting. And that's just as important, if not more important, than the type of athlete that you're getting. And that's why it's so tough, because these guys are coached by agents. They're coached by people the agents bring in to give the right answers, to tell teams what they want to hear. And you have to figure out, based on really, and a lot of times, gut and feeling, whether or not these guys are sincere about certain things, and figure out whether or not these guys are really, whether or not they really believe what they're telling you. And these are all very difficult things to figure out. And yes, some teams are better at it than others. If you scout properly, you talk to the right people, yes, you can find out more information on other teams. But really, there's no 100% crystal clear picture on anybody in this draft. Everyone is an unknown. Everybody, you're going on the best information you can when you pick them, but there's no guarantees of anything in the NFL draft. And that's what the Giants are doing now. They're gathering all that information, they're bringing it together, and they're trying to figure out what their best move is in round number one. And remember, folks, I bring this up every show, I'll bring it up again. The Giants will pick the best available player. They're not going to reach for a position and risk taking a guy that maybe won't be an impact player when they could take an impact player at a position where they might not have a need at. So keep that all in mind as we move forward towards the NFL draft, just over 2 weeks away. I believe it's 16 days, if I'm not mistaken. 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. Larry's out in Illinois, wants to talk NFL draft. Good morning, Larry.
Hey, John, how are you?
Doing great. What's up?
I wanted to talk draft first round. I read a lot of things where people saying big need at offensive line for the Giants, big need at tackle. I just don't see it, to be quite honest. The Giants obviously had enough confidence in Will Beatty to be the left tackle to draft him in the second round to start last year before his injury. Didn't have a serious injury like a knee or anything. It was an eye, whatever. David Deal started left tackle for two Super Bowl teams and still has plenty in the tank. In my opinion, one of the most underrated Giants of the past 10 years, moving all over the line. And then they have Brewer as well in the fourth round, who they supposedly like. I just don't see it when people say that they have this huge needed offensive tackle. What do you think?
Well, to say huge need might be a bit of an overstatement, only because they have their starters coming back from last year, like you said. You can easily move David Deal out to right tackle to replace Creed McKenzie. Then you have Christie and theoretically Kevin Booth playing the two guard positions, David Boss at center, and Will Beatty, who played left tackle most of last year. But keep this in mind. That group of guys, for the most part, were the 32nd best team running the football all year long. So is it a matter of being happy with what you have? Did they do a good job protecting Eli Manning? No doubt about it. But you got to figure out a way to generate more of a running game. And if you want to put that on the running backs, you can. But in my opinion, I think that had just as much to do with the offensive line as it did the running back. So is there a huge need at the offensive line? Like if the Giants don't draft an offensive lineman, are they finished? Are they done? Certainly not. But I do think there is a lot of room and improvement on the line, especially, Larry, when it comes to running the football. And that might be what Jerry Reese is looking for in this draft.
I agree. I just don't – I mean specifically at the tackle position. I think if they want to improve the run game, I would be more inclined to get a big, road grader type guard or even center and move Boss out to guard. I think that would be better value. I just don't see a spot on the tackles that a Mike Adams or a guy like that is just going to come right in and start and be a huge upgrade.
Hey, look, David Deal will be fine at tackle. Even if you move him back to left tackle if you want, he's played there for many years against guys like DeMarcus Ware, Julius Peppers. He'll be fine out there. You're right. David Deal's not an issue. He'll be great, and you're right. I think he is one of the most underrated Giants in the past, 7-8 years. He's been fantastic. Will Beatty, I don't think he's completely secured that starting spot yet. Is he a good pass protector? Yes, but and you mentioned his injury wasn't serious, but a retina injury can be extremely serious. If you remember Amari Stoudemire for the Knicks when he suffered that injury a few years ago, his career really was in question for a while. Now, he can wear the visor on the mask to protect it. He has the face mask, the visor, whatever he needs to do. And he'll be able to play and come back, and it shouldn't be a long-term issue. But I think Will Beatty still has a little ways to go, though, to proving to this coaching staff that he is a 7-8 year long-term solution at left tackle. Was he solid? Yes. Was he blow me away, fantastic future Pro Bowler? I think the answer to that question is not yet.
Okay, can I ask one more quick question?
Yeah, what do you got, Larry? No problem.
Assuming these two players are both still there, who do you think would have a bigger impact on the offense? A third receiver like a Kendall Wright if he would drop, or a vertical tight end like Kobe Fleener?
That's a good question. I think
would be a third option. Would the Aaron Hernandez type guy fit the offense better, or would a Manningham replacement?
I think I'd prefer to go with this is important now. I'd want the two-way tight end that can not only get down the field, but also block a little bit too. And now, am I getting greedy here? Maybe I am, and that's fine. But, you know, Coach Coughlin likes those two-way players at tight end, and he will always pick the guy that can block over the guy that can catch. So if you get that guy that's going to be more of an H-back type, that's not much of a blocker, and is just going to go out into patterns, in a lot of situations, he might have trouble getting out on the field. You'd almost rather get that third wide receiver out there. And I think the Giants still have some faith that a guy like Jarrell Jernigan, the third-round pick last year, might be able to develop into that slot receiver. So, and Martellus Bennett's been in the league. He, frankly, despite all his athleticism, has not been very productive. They hope, with more of an opportunity this year, not playing behind a guy like Jason Witten, he can give you something. But I think there's more of a need to bring in a guy that can play that two-way tight end position that can start for you for 7-8 years. Because quite frankly, the Giants are set a wide receiver. They have Akiem Nicks, they have Victor Cruz, and those guys can carry you a long way being your 1-2 punch.
All right. Thanks very much, John.
Hey, appreciate it, Larry. 201-939-4513. 201-939-4513. Of course, you can go to Twitter as well at #GiantsChat. But this is why the draft is fun. You get all these situations here. You don't know who's going to be available at the end of the first round right now. And it's going to be a huge waiting game. And I'm sure Giant fans will be at the edge of their seat on that Thursday night, just watching guys slowly slide off the board. And it's going to, you know, your palms are really going to start getting sweaty when you get to that 22nd, 23rd pick. And you really have guys on your list like, boy, I would really love a Fleener with you. I really want him. And then he goes and you lose it. But that's what the Giants are doing now. They're making sure that they have a plan A, plan B, plan C, plan B, plan D, go all the way down the list. They want to make sure that no matter what happens, they are ready to pick the correct player that'll help this football team not only now, but in the future. Remember, it's an impact player. It doesn't necessarily matter the position that the guy is at, but you got to have a guy that will impact your team positively. And remember this too. The Giants should be getting a lot of help from their 2011 draft class. These guys last year, quite frankly, besides a guy like Jaquan Williams, didn't give the Giants a whole heck of a lot. Their first-round pick, Prince Amukamara, broke his foot in training camp. He didn't give him a whole lot. Their second-round pick, Marvin Austin, had the injury in training camp. He didn't give him anything all year. Jarrell Jernigan gave him a little bit on the return game. That's it. Brewer, at tackle, didn't play. And do the Giants have hopes for him in the future? Yeah, but he's a project. He's been a good student, but he's still a project, and he's not ready to be a starting tackle in this league, in my opinion. And then you move on. Greg Jones and Tyler Sash were fine on special teams. They are okay. But, you know, they weren't huge impact players either. So the Giants hope that their 2011 draft class will really emerge this upcoming season, in addition to whoever they get in the 2012 draft. So it should be an exciting, exciting time come 16 days in the NFL draft. 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. Now, a couple weeks ago, I had a chance to catch up with New York Giants defensive lineman Justin Tuck. And I talked to him a little bit about his injury that he's recovering from last season, coming back, his memories from the Super Bowl, moving forward. I asked him a question about the Super Bowl ring. But remember, this was from about 2 weeks ago, 2-3 weeks ago, I guess. So make sure you guys keep that in mind with some of the questions and the answers. And this is when I had a chance to catch up with Giants defensive captain and two-time Super Bowl champion, Justin Tuck.
Justin, you've had 2 weeks or 3 weeks here to ruminate on the Super Bowl. As you look back now, does anything jump out at you that maybe didn't as you were experiencing it and right afterwards?
Not really. I mean, I know a lot of people get caught up in the Super Bowl, but at the end of the day, for us players, we try our best to make it, as a regular game like it, you know, it always is for us. So you try your best just to block out all the hype around it, and I think I did a pretty good job of doing that because I don't remember anything from the game that just stands out. I remember the plays from the game. I remember the things that, you know, helped us win the football game, but You know, if you'd asked me that question the day after the Super Bowl, I'd have, you know, had the same answer. So it wasn't like I was so overcome with you know, the hype of the game that I didn't pay attention to things that were around me. But that being said, it still was one of the, you know, another one of those great, great feelings in your sports career to know that, you know, you won another Super Bowl.
Can you pinpoint a game, a moment, a practice even, where you kind of saw the defense turn that corner and improve and get to the point in the playoffs and the regular season where you could be a championship caliber defense?
Yeah, I think that fourth quarter against the Jets had a tremendous you know, impact on how we played the rest of the year. I think it went a long way to building that confidence, you know, winning that football game the way we did here, and then coming back, you know, building on that and coming back against Dallas, two great rivalries in their own self. So I think it, those two games in itself really did a great job of getting us in the right mind frame to play the type of defense we played in the playoffs.
What did change? Was it mental approach? Was it preparation? Was it trusting each other? Was it physical execution?
Yeah.
What allowed you to have that type of turnaround?
Well, I think you named a lot of them. Obviously, you know, early in the year we wasn't as healthy. I think we got healthy at the right time. I think us being healthy allowed us to build our chemistry with each other. You know, early in the year we kind of had, you know, we was mixing and matching a lot. So, you know, obviously our chemistry was lacking, but it all kind of came together right at the right time. And I think a lot of those things you just said had a lot to do with it. But the biggest thing is, you know, regardless of what you do in this league, no matter the talent, you got to execute. And, you know, a lot of credit goes to Perry Fuel for simplifying some of the things that we went through and just making it kind of player friendly there at the end of the year. And I think it really, really benefited us, especially on our back end. You know, the Corey Websters, the Antrell Rosses, the Antrell Rolls, all of those guys really came together and helped us, you know, build a defense at the end of the year that we had.
Now, one of the great things about winning a Super Bowl, for all you fans out there, if you're a player, you could do a lot of cool stuff because you won the Super Bowl. One cool thing you got to do was check out a NASCAR race. You're actually wearing the pullover right now.
Yeah.
You guys have your NASCAR package, and
yeah,
I guess NASCAR heard about it. They brought some of you guys down there, and you had a little fun over the weekend, huh?
Yeah, man. Me and OC went down and kind of got to live that life for a few days. You know, as he walks by right now, Matthias Kiwanuka was supposed to come down with us, but he had some pressing issues to take care of his own, right? So, it was a lot of fun. It was definitely something. You know, I grew up in Alabama. I grew up around NASCAR. Didn't really get to experience it like I did last weekend, but, you know, it was fun, and I'm actually hoping to do it again sometime soon.
Okay, now, the other cool thing you get to do, a lot of stupid secret meetings going around about trying to design this year's ring. Can you give us any insight, any secret stuff? What do you got, anything?
All I can say is this. We just finalized it, for the most part, probably 95% done. And I know Strahan talked about a 10-foot table ring, but I think we beat him by a lot. That's all I'm going to say.
All right, finally, and I feel like I have to ask you this question after every season. It seems like after every year, all the King's surgeons, all the King's men have to put Justin Tuck back together again. How you feeling? I know you had to have some surgery.
Yeah.
Can you give the fans a little status report on how Justin Tuck's doing?
Hey, man, I'll be ready. That's all they need to know. We had a little shoulder clean out and things like that, but I'm feeling good. Obviously, you can see I'm already out the sling, already moving my arm around, so it wasn't anything of major concern.
Now, you fought through a lot of injuries during the season, and you're always very coy about it as the season's going on. Obviously, you're a football player. You don't want to be seen as complaining about injuries or anything.
Yeah.
Can you give the fans, though, now that the season's over, a little taste of everything you had to go through? And did that shoulder injury go all the way back to that preseason game against the Jets? Is that where the whole thing really started?
That's where everything kind of started. In that preseason game, I hurt my neck in that game and kind of had a really bad stinger that stuck with me pretty much the whole year. But, you know, I had foot, knee, groin, neck, shoulder, wrist. I tore all the ligaments in two fingers. I think that's it.
That's enough.
Yeah, I'll stop at that.
All right, but obviously you're feeling better now, and you'll be 100% for next season?
Oh, no question. I feel good. You know, it's just in the year, in the season, you really don't have time to get healed. So when you get a nick or a neck, it's going to linger with you all year. And that's basically what I had all year, just some nicks. Nothing, no major stuff, but just stuff that just wouldn't allow me to play the type of game that I wanted to play for most of the year. So, but, you know, heading into this offseason, I feel great. I feel a lot better now than I did when the season was going. So that's encouraging, and it's only going to get better as we get back to, you know, training and rehabbing and just getting our bodies ready for the next year.
Enjoy your offseason, Justin. You deserve it.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Justin, you've had a
– that's Giants defensive end Justin Tuck. John Schmoke with you on Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. 201-939-4513. Also on the web at hashtag – on Twitter, rather, at hashtag Giants Chat. The report just came down not too long ago that Chris Mortensen is reporting that Bill Parcells is going to remain retired and will not take over for Sean Payton as the Saints' interim head coach this year. So that'll be very interesting to see where the Saints go for their head coaching position this year. Do they go in-house to a guy like Steve Spagnuolo? But he's a guy that hasn't been in that system before. He's really never worked with Sean Payton as a head coach, so it'd be kind of hard for him to carry on that method and whatever feeling and way Payton motivates and carries that team forward for him to kind of keep that going and keep it in some sort of harmony with what the Saints have been before. So it'll be very interesting to see where that'll go. I honestly thought Parcells was a great fit for the Saints. Whether or not it worked for Parcells is another story. How important it was for him to get into the Hall of Fame as quickly as possible, because that would reset his clock and he had to wait another 5 years before he gets into the Hall of Fame. So that'll be very interesting to see exactly where the Saints now go to find their head coach, whether they go in-house, try to find another maybe older candidate to replace him, and we'll see where the Saints go with that. Another interesting report I thought came out the other day, Eric Decker via ESPN.com said that Peyton Manning's arm strength seems to be NFL-ready, maybe not necessarily back to where it was, but certainly good enough to play in the NFL, so that's certainly good news for the Broncos. And frankly, I realize that people, you know, some people might not like Peyton or whatever, or you might root for a team that might play the Broncos this year, but it's good for the league that Peyton Manning is going to come back and be an upper echelon quarterback. This guy, quite frankly, has been such a pleasure to watch play on the field these past couple decades, really, and he's just been so much fun to watch. He's such a, really a scientist and a tactician and a surgeon going about his business at the quarterback position, and I, for one, will be very happy to see him come back and be a very effective quarterback in the National Football League. Obviously, Jim Irsay had a tweet the other day that a lot of people are interpreting that Andrew Luck is going to be their guy at number one. I know, shocker. Everyone was really thrown by that. Breaking news that the Colts are going to pick Andrew Luck as Peyton Manning's successor. No one saw that one coming. The other one, obviously, Griffin is going to probably be the Redskins' pick, and people are debating whether or not he's going to fit into that Mike Shanahan system. But to me, what makes Griffin special, you know, people talk about his arm strength, his athleticism, and all that stuff, but what sets Robert Griffin III apart is that he's a smart quarterback. And everyone says that he is off the charts in terms of understanding even NFL-style offenses, and he's going to be able to learn systems very quickly, integrate himself in quickly. And to me, as important as all the physical stuff is, running around, arm strength, pocket, you know, all that stuff, you have to have the head for the position. If you don't have the head for the position to play quarterback in the NFL, you don't have a chance to succeed. And by all accounts, Robert Griffin III has that in spades, and he should be a very, very good quarterback moving forward. Bad news for the NFC East if the Redskins have actually finally found their franchise quarterback, something they haven't really had since Mark Rippon led them to a Super Bowl back in 1990. And that is the truth, folks. Donovan McNabb, sorry, he was over the hill at that point. I'm not going to count him. But then you'll have Tony Romo, Eli Manning, Michael Vick, and Robert Griffin III. That is what you call a very tough division, but a division that will be a lot of fun to watch for the next 4 or 5 years. And it's funny, you don't think about it, but Romo, Eli, and Vic are all just about, I'd say in the middle of their primes. They're all about 31 years old. That's about in the center of the prime for a quarterback. So maybe they got, you know, I would say you start exiting your prime as a quarterback around age 34, something like that. I think you play your best until about 34, 35, then you start to go down. So we're going to have about 3 or 4 more years where those guys are in their prime as we move forward in the NFC East, which should be a whole lot of fun. All right, everybody, I just want to remind you that Big Blue Kickoff Live comes your way every single morning from now until the NFL draft during the week, Monday through Friday, from 10 to 10:30 right here on Giants.com. As we move forward, the players will report in about a week. We'll start having them on the show, whether in recorded interviews or live. We'll get ready for the draft as well. We'll talk about some of the best prospects at certain positions. All that great stuff will be coming your way right here on Giants.com. Thank you for joining us, everybody. Make sure you stay tuned to Giants.com for all the latest news and everything New York Giants, exclusive interviews, a lot of draft stuff coming up, season review, Eisen's mailbag, Papa's perspective, you name it, we got it. Check it out, Giants.com, each and every day. Your only 24/7 source for everything New York football Giants. My name is John Schmelk. We'll see you tomorrow morning, 10 o'clock, Big Blue Kickoff Live, right here on Giants.com.